listening to the John Barrett Leadership Podcast, where you'll hear great ideas, insight, and inspiration to level up your leadership ability.
Hey, everybody, it's John Barrett on the John Barrett Leadership Podcast. Welcome back. We are going to help level you up so you don't level out in your influence, your impact, your income, everything that you've got going on. Hey, listen, today I want to throw it back a little bit. My business partner, Jamin Baxter, and I, we did a podcast years ago, kind of just a small series of interviews with world-class leaders that we called Coffee with Leaders. And it was really all about just what if we were sitting down with these incredible leaders, authors that are world-class, kind of world-renowned in their own right, and we were just having coffee and we just asked them questions about leadership. So this is an episode that I want to share with you, because in this interview that we had with Mark Sanborn, the leading author, a leading speaker in the leadership world for the last, 25 plus probably years. He is absolutely incredible. And we reached out to Mark, and I had been impacted by him tremendously throughout my whole life. And we reached out to him and he agreed to do this interview with us a few years ago. And I want to share that with you because I think there is so much insight that Mark is able to share that really helps us as leaders. Now, this guy has written, I can't even remember how many books, maybe over 10 books that are New York Times bestsellers. He is literally one of the top speakers in the leadership arena. So without further ado, I want to take you back to that episode where Jamin and I sit down with Mark Sanborn and we just ask him real open questions about leadership, about life, all those kind of things. So check this out and be encouraged today.
Imagine with us grabbing some coffee, sitting down at a table, and just asking some questions that we've never been able to ask before. So John,
yeah.
Why don't you introduce our guest?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I am very, very honored to introduce our guest today, Mark Sanborn. He's a globally recognized and Hall of Fame keynote speaker, best-selling author, and he is going to be in the studio with us today. Now, I've got to let you know that I've been following Mark for about 20 years. He doesn't know this, but he has been a lifelong mentor and a coach to me through his books and resources and videos. And so today is a really, really special day for me because one of my heroes that has really impacted who I am and my leadership journey and then impacted so many people that I've been able to impact. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, we've got Mark Sanborn with us in the studio. Mark, it is so great to have you here today with us.
Well, John, you just made my day. One of the highlights of my career is when I find out I positively influenced somebody who positively influenced others. So
that's right.
Thank you for the kind words, and I'm delighted to be with you both on the show.
Yeah, it is so great. I know that, Mark, your name came up right away when we began to kind of think through who we would love to invite on this show and be with us. And I'm so excited just to hear some of your wisdom today. I've even got The Potential Principle, one of your books right here with me. This is one of my favorites, Mark. Now, all of your books are my favorite. I got to say that. But The Potential Principle is really, really great one. The Fred Factor is when I got introduced early on to you so many years ago with your resources. But boy, this book was awesome. And I just thank you so much for putting that out. If our listeners, if you've not got some of Mark's books, you got to pick them up. Potential Principle is phenomenal. Mark, real quick, this is kind of off script, but what was the seed of this book for you that really sparked this one into existence?
Most of my clients over the years have already been successful organizations or people that wanted to become more successful. You know, to use an old cliche, the people that most need to hear the sermon usually don't go to church.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't speaking to people and organizations that weren't already performing at some pretty high levels. And so I started doing a program called How the Best Get Better, because I say that better always beats best. And, you know, we think the hardest thing we do in life is become the best at what we do. Excuse me. And certainly that is difficult. The only thing more difficult is becoming the best at whatever you do, the best in your business, the best in your market space, and then continuing to improve. Because the roadway of life is littered with people that were once the best and then fell from grace because they didn't have a process for continuing to get better. So that's the genesis for the book. And John, you mentioned 20 years ago, the Fred Factor is coming out in a 20th anniversary edition that John Maxwell kindly wrote the foreword to the original and an expanded foreword to the 20th anniversary edition.
That's
so
great.
I'm pretty excited about the fact that for 20 years that book has continued to have an impact.
Is that this year that that is coming out?
March, it's 20 years old in 2024, and that edition will be released in March.
Okay. Oh, wow. I'm excited for that. That's great, Mark, to hear that. We've got a series of questions, as Jamin mentioned earlier, that we go through. Really, we know that questions are how we grow. It's how we learn. It's how we get better. So we've just got a series of questions that we want to unfold here and jump in. So, Jamin, I'll let you jump in with the first question, and we'll just kind of launch from there and have some coffee and talk and chat about leadership.
Mark, what is the greatest lesson that you've ever learned in life?
You know, in my work, I say leaders don't know the right answers, but they ask the best questions. And that is one of the most difficult questions I think anybody could be asked or answered. By the way, when I turned 50, and again, I updated it at 60, I wrote down the 50 most important lessons I learned in life at 50, and then I added 10 more at 60. And the reason I did that was twofold. Secondary was that I wanted to kind of rehearse what I had learned so I didn't forget it. But more importantly, I wanted to leave a record for my boys. My sons now are 22 and 25. And if anything were to happen to me, I wanted them to know what I had spent a lifetime learning. So today, after many years, I think the biggest lesson I've learned is that the older you get, the bigger the lessons are, but they're a little less frequent. When you're young, research says you are very high on something called fluid intelligence. Fluid intelligence is the ability to learn really quickly and to kind of be a sponge for ideas. And as you get older, at some point, there's no definitive point in time, but older people are very high on crystallized intelligence. And crystallized intelligence is powerful because it allows you to make connections you couldn't make when you were younger simply because you didn't have the experiences and the data points.
Right.
So now it's always pleasantly surprising when I have a really big insight, and I'm reminded of a lot of important things on a regular basis, but the big insights, they're less frequent, but they're bigger because I guess if I could use a layman's understanding of those two concepts, I'm drawing on a lot more data points and a lot more experience. So you would expect then that you'd have fewer new insights, but the ones that you have would be bigger. So I guess to kind of summarize all that the biggest lessons keep happening. They just happen a little less frequently as you get older.
Yeah, that's good. And, you know, I'd be curious, Mark, when you think about young leaders in the context of what you just shared, and you think about young leaders that are taking in so much information, right? Every moment is hopefully a big moment for them where they're learning and growing. What's some advice that you would give in sort of the context of, you know, you use some science in there in terms of how our brains formulize? What was some advice you might give to young leaders in terms of how can they sort of take in everything that they've got? And because there's so much, not maybe lose sight of that because you're learning so much so fast.
And there are a few things that come to mind. I think the first is to beware of the really easy ideas. Because of the prevalence of social media and the speed and the ability to disseminate a lot of information, there's a lot of bad information out there. Mm. And in the old days, not that many years ago, the hardest part of learning was accessing information. Well, now the hardest part is assessing because you can access information instantly,
wow,
but a lot of it, regrettably, isn't accurate. The second thing is I would pick leaders who have proven experience in some genre of leadership, not just writing about it, but having led. You don't have to have been the number one CEO in the world to have some insights on leadership. But just like I wouldn't want to go to a seminar on how to get rich led by somebody that had never been rich, I wouldn't want to, or wouldn't think I could learn a lot from someone about leadership who had never led a for-profit, nonprofit, some kind of an organization. And then the third thing I would say is when you are younger, and I only speak because I did this, I would gather a lot of ideas, but I didn't organize them well. And, you know, that's one of the things that John Maxwell does so well, and I learned from him is the ability to organize your ideas so that earlier on you can make connections. I used to literally review years of ideas, you know, just line-itemed ideas that were organized by no more than the calendar year to be reminded of or to find something I was looking for. Well, now technology has made that much, much easier. And so to make better connections, your ideas need to be better organized.
Yeah.
And I guess I'd throw in a fourth thing, and that is, write down what you're learning from your experience, not just vicariously through books and seminars and others. Mine in life, because some of the best lessons will come from there.
Yeah, that's good. I love that, accessing versus assessing, right? The difference there. That's such a great point right now of just being able to make sure you're getting the right information, the right inspiration, the right voice right now, because there's so many voices out there. But I think in leadership, being able to surround yourself and assessing what's coming in, I think that's a great point. I think that's a great insight.
It is. Mark, I wanted to ask, what's the system you use right now to catalog your ideas?
Well, you know, now you can search by keywords. I'll just kind of give you one example. It may be a little bit counterintuitive. Now, when I review ideas, I try to ruthlessly eliminate the ones that aren't truly powerful or truly memorable. Sometimes I'll write down an idea that I think, wow, that's really good. Maybe not. Maybe it was just okay. And I want to refine my database, my knowledge, if you will, so that, because in limited time, both in terms of audiences and age, you want to be sharing your best information. One of the exercises I teach clients is MIM, which is most important messages, MIM. And that says, if you are a communicator or if you're a leader, if you're doing an onboarding, if you're talking to a new employee, you should have a pretty concise list of what are the 10 or so most important things you believe, either about leadership or about the company where the new employee works or about life. And again, it's a way to kind of refine just this mass of ideas. You know, we've all talked to people where we had to work to extract the ideas from just all of the information they shared. So I think as a communicator, as a speaker, and as a leader, it's good to know what are your most important messages that you want to share in limited time with the people that you lead.
I like that, MIM, most important messages.
It's a good takeaway.
So we all know that leaders, to be a good leader, and you just talked about this, John, you have to always be learning. You've been in the business for how many years, Mark?
Well, it depends on how you count. I gave my first paid speech at 19, but I started speaking full-time at 27. So coming up on 40 years.
On 40 years. And I know, just because I know the kind of guy you are, you're still learning. So talk to us little bit about what are you learning right now?
Metacognition is learning about learning or thinking about thinking. And it sounds kind of airy, but it's a really powerful idea. And so I think about my thinking so that I can improve it. And one of the things that has been familiar over the years, but I couldn't really crystallize until lately, is that we create our circumstances, but our circumstances create us. You know, too often I think we focus on what we make happen. And we've all heard that saying, you know, you're responsible for how you respond to what you can't control. And that is pretty obvious in the big areas. But little circumstances offer the opportunity to really learn. I've come to believe we like success, but we learn far more from failure. We remember things with a greater emotional impact, and failure tends to have a greater emotional impact in many instances than success does. So I think, for instance, let's take COVID. Now, COVID was a pretty big circumstance. I could have, you know, bemoaned my COVID vacation, as I call it. I've been traveling probably 165 days a year in the past decade before COVID, and then COVID hit, and it was the longest I was ever in my home since I purchased it. The longest I ever spent with my wife since I married her. I'm not sure how she thought COVID worked out for having me around so much. But a couple of things happened. First, that circumstance freed up more time to study. I believe I learned more during COVID than I had the previous 5 years. Wow. For the simple reason that I had more time and space to learn, to get very intentional, to use new tools, to do deeper dives. Another thing I did is I had a chance to do some peer research. You know, so often we use secondary research, what somebody else learned. My friend Jason Dorsey, who has a research company in Austin, I worked with him, and I wanted to find out how leaders were doing during COVID. And you think, well, that's pretty specific research because COVID's over. Yeah, but COVID is a crisis, and there'll be other crises, whether it's a lockdown, a quarantine, an economic disaster. In other words, leaders lead through crisis differently than they typically lead when there is no crisis. So I used some original research, over 1,000 respondents, so high level of validity, and I was able to extract some lessons for the first time that were research-based, not just observational or anecdotal. And I also came out of COVID actually weighing less than I do now. I'd like to get back to my COVID weight, because that circumstance offered the opportunity to cut back on exercise, could no longer go to my gym to eat more, because after all, there weren't a lot of fun things to do during COVID. But I made a decided, took a stance of saying, I want to not have those things happen. So I developed a program during COVID that I could use. And I wish I'd have followed it post-COVID, because now I'm my weight is higher than it was then. So that's what I mean by, we create circumstances, certainly, but don't ever take for granted that a circumstance enforced or imposed on you by life isn't rich with opportunities, because they can be often opportunities that we don't see when we're busy creating circumstances.
I kind of feel like he answered that question and the next question, which is right. How has failure shaped your life? That was a twofer right there.
Yeah, well, failure, wow. Nobody likes it. And it took me a long time to come to terms with it, that every failure does have. I want your listeners and viewers to know this isn't happy talk. It's just when you do fail, which is inevitable, you can either learn from it or you can languish in it. And I certainly am guilty of having languished in my failures. But I always now ask the question, what's the lesson here? And there's often more than one. So don't waste, just as the political bromide says, politicians never waste a good crisis. We as people should never waste a good failure. Postmortems, are a really good thing for a leader to do with his or her team. If something doesn't go right, or even if something does go right, ask the question why it did. It's easy to ask why it didn't work. That's a typical postmortem. But another kind of postmortem is saying, okay, we succeeded. Why did we succeed? Yes. What's replicable? What was fortuitous?
I had a supervisor that would tell us, guys, always look at this because you're in the good old days. And I liked that. And then to piggyback off that, when I'm on the mountaintop, because I know the valley's coming, I always try to just embrace where I'm at right now and appreciate the mountaintop. And then when I'm in the valley, what can I learn from it?
Yeah, that's good. I'd be curious, Mark, you talked about that postmortem and, just assessing and kind of reviewing and reflecting upon when failure happens so that we do extract those learning moments. You mentioned a few questions in there, which I think was good, and maybe you just reiterate that, but give me kind of an example of what's your process when there's maybe a failure or just something that you didn't go as you wanted. How do you go about that review process? Do you have a framework? Is it more just intuitive? Do you literally have kind of a series of questions that you go through to reflect and extract that? Or what does that look like for you, that process of reflection?
Yeah, kind of yes and no. But I'll give you three questions that you can use individually and you can use with the team. I often remind leaders when I work with them, you can't get full credit unless you take full responsibility. So if you take credit for the success of your team, and you should always share that credit, but if you take credit for success, you should never place blame for failure. Not because something didn't happen that you couldn't control, but that's just table stakes. That's part of the game of life. So you got to get full credit, you got to take full responsibility. And the three questions that I kind of ask myself, but you could ask your team is what went right? That's the focusing on the positive. What went wrong? And what could have been better? The third question is my favorite.
Yeah.
What went right and what went wrong are fairly self-evident. But what could be done better is where you improve. The first two questions, the first question, what went right, is what you replicate. The second, what went wrong, is what you fix. The third is what could be done better is where you improve. So those are, I try to keep it simple. I have become increasingly a fan of Occam's razor. Everybody hears about Occam's razor. He was a theologian. If you Google him, you'll find some really cool drawings of the guy. He looked very serious, but the paraphrase of Occam's razor, also known as parsimony, is that you should make things as simple as possible, but no simpler.
Yeah.
And it's a fine line between simplistic, and there's a lot of simplistic in the world. The three steps to becoming a world-class leader. Okay, well, maybe there are three steps to becoming a better leader, but in three steps, you're not going to become a global leader. Sorry. However, there are some things that, you know, you can mine deeply, and those three questions are a good jumping off point.
Yeah, that I love that. That's so great. It's simple, but yet I love the idea of you replicate, you fix, and then improve, right? So you almost go through that process. I love that. That's such a good framework.
Another quick thing, the replication changes. That's why you need to keep asking the question. There's been an assumption for many years that if it works, we keep doing it. Some of the things used to work no longer work or no longer work as well.
Yep.
You know, it's the law of entropy. You know, you go from higher to lower order. And so there's always a little bit of entropy, even in the best ideas. And so I said after COVID, if you don't refocus on what you are going to do after COVID, you will repeat only what you did before COVID. And many of those things no longer are as effective as they once were.
Yeah, I'd encourage all of our listeners, as well as myself, to really follow that. I think that's great, not only from a personal standpoint, as you mentioned, but even as a team, to look, you know, after the launch of that product or the event or whatever it is that you're doing, a new process or that, just look back and ask those three questions. That's good. Very good.
It really is. Mark, what is on your reading list right now? And then can you talk a little bit about how that can help our listeners?
Well, I'll give you one real quick, what I would call a pre-endorsement. I haven't read it yet, but a friend I value greatly read this book, Making Numbers Count. Hmm. It is written by Carla Starr and Chip.
Yeah, I just heard of that book.
Chip Heath. I wonder how many times people have accidentally called him Chip Heath. Maybe his wife. Hey,
that's
Chip.
Right.
Chip Heath, who I respect. And that was not a Freudian slip. I just misspoke. But that's about how we can use numbers to communicate more clearly and with more impact. And that's one of the things that is specific to me as a speaker, but should be a concern to all leaders, is the impact we have with our words, not how many words we use. Just as a quick aside, one of the mistakes I believe leaders made during COVID is they communicated more, but not better. Mm. Throwing more information at people who are already confused and overwhelmed generally is not a good strategy. Becoming more concise so that whatever information they get is taken as important and then acted upon, that's the goal. So that when I say impact, you know, being able to use numbers in such a way, for instance, knowing that Netflix took 3.5 years to reach 1 million users, and that, and this is a segue into what I think people need to be reading and learning now, ChatGPT took 5 days. 1 million users, 3.5 years from Netflix, 5 days for ChatGPT. And that is my singular focus, and that is artificial intelligence. I have come to believe that it isn't as important as the internet. It's bigger. Mm-hmm. The internet allows it, enables it, it complements it. But I think that as excited as everybody seems to be about it, I think this is a history-changing technology that we don't begin to know the implications of. And a couple of things as I was thinking about the show today. The first is, if you don't have a ChatGPT free account, get one, because you can do a lot to learn about it. I now have a premium account, which is $20 a month, which, if once you start using it, will blow your mind about what you can do with it. And that's before all of the plugins. There are now, I think, 30 different ChatGPT apps or more that you can use, so that you can use send ChatGPT to your own website to summarize your own articles, to edit your own videos, to suggest improvements. I mean, it really is, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But first, get an account. Number two, play with it. And remember that the one thing as a jumping off point, I am not an AI expert, trust me. I have friends that are, and I know more people that think they are that aren't. But what I would say, it's all about prompts, you know, garbage in, garbage out. That was 50 years ago in computer technology. The prompts that you use, the questions you ask and how you ask those questions make all the difference. Yesterday, for fun, I sent it to my wife. I went to ChatGPT, hadn't done this before, and I said, write an article from my perspective, my belief system, on Romans 8:28. Give me 4 or 5 bullet points of 3 actionable ideas. And 40 seconds later, I had a sermon.
Yeah.
It wasn't Jonathan Edwards or Billy Graham worthy, but I had a sermon. Then I sent it to my wife. I said, look what I was able to get in 40 seconds. Then I took that same sermon, I fed it back into ChatGPT, and I said, include a joke and 2 illustrations. And it came back with a really bad joke But, you know, it's not perfect. At least it did what I asked it to do. I should have said, come up with a good joke.
Yeah.
And then we had two illustrations. Now, it doesn't matter. I did that for fun, because Romans 8:28 is one of my favorite scriptures. But you can do that with literally anything. Keep in mind that ChatGPT, I think the data set was frozen around 2019. Supposedly now they're going to unleash what's happened and populated the net since then. But with a plugin, you can send ChatGPT out to websites to do the work that you want it to do. So, yeah. You know, even though, you know, what happened since 2019, like if you ask about COVID, it'll tell you, sorry, but, you know, my data points, my information ends in 2019. Mm-hmm. Okay, so having said that, there's three things I want your listeners to think about AI if they take on the challenge of learning about it. Don't get overwhelmed. You got to run fast, but you don't have to run scared. The first is the practical side of AI. You've got an article. Your boss says, you know what? I want you to write an article about why using our firm is a better value proposition than using our competitor XYZ. Using your prompts, you can go in and you can say, you know, send it to your website and send it to your competitor's website and say, write a compelling 500-word article about the three reasons our firm has a better value proposition. That was actually would require using a plugin. So let me make it even easier. Come up with 3 points why using a social media firm to do your social media is cost effective. That way you can just put it into ChatGPT. It doesn't have to go anywhere to get that information. Now, keep in mind, and I do this all the time, I play devil's advocate with myself. You can also say, come up with 3 reasons why using a social media firm isn't cost effective
right.
in doing your social media. So people need to understand this basic premise, you know, your output's as good as your input, and it is objective only to the degree you are objective. So, you know, if you think you're going to, you know, get some kind of ruling about, you know, something really important, you might want to rethink that. So the first is practical. The second is pioneering. I've got friends that are doing things right now that I hope to learn to be able to do with the relaunch of the Fred Factor. Things that would have taken a team of 3 people months to do, I have friends accomplishing in a matter of minutes. Now, they've spent hours learning the prompts and learning the technology. So I don't want to make it sound like they woke up one day and said, I'm going to be a pioneer in this area. They did the hard work, but now they have the tools to be truly innovative. And the third thing I'd like people to think about is the philosophical, because there are a lot of, you know, opposing viewpoints. Mark Andreessen, you know, venture capitalist, wrote something anybody can Google. It's a long piece called Why AI Will Save the World. But you can also get opposing viewpoints from very smart people about the real inherent dangers in AI. Mm-hmm. And if we think it was hard to assess information before, AI can literally use your face, sync your lips to words you never spoke, and create a video of something you never did. Which, by the way, for those that like to read, Michael Crichton wrote about over 25 years ago in one of his novels. And back then, it was a clever idea, and in 2023, it's real. So that's what I'm learning. That's at the top of my what I need to know list. And frankly, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, and I think I always say that AI is going to be a leader's best friend here eventually. Could be your worst enemy, yeah.
My friend Ford Sake says, well, AI won't replace you. It'll only replace you if you don't understand how to use it.
That's good.
Yeah.
No, that's good. And I think those are practical tips, you know, Mark, on how leaders can use AI right now and really lean into it and understand it, like you said, right, so that they know where the pitfalls can be, where the dangers could be, but yet where the leveraging points can be as well that can really enhance and really improve. So I appreciate you kind of unpacking that a little bit. Are there any specific resources that you're kind of digging into where you're learning about AI right now? Is there a book or a website, or is it just kind of taking it all in and researching everything?
Yeah, I just ran across, I can't vouch for it. I've just started reading every day a website called Superhuman that focuses on AI specifically and provides kind of a cross section of articles. And I found it very interesting and helpful. They also, in the few days that I've used Superhuman, and by the way, if I'm getting it wrong and it's super brain or super mind, please put that in your show notes so people don't go, he's hallucinating it. But I'm pretty sure it's superhuman. And, you know, the other thing is look for people who have a background in artificial intelligence who are writing the books, not people who are jumping on the ebook bandwagon.
Sure.
And blathering. You know, people are writing ebooks about artificial intelligence using artificial intelligence.
That's what I said. They're using ChatGPT to write their book.
Yeah, which is kind of an interesting thing when you think about it. But there are some very credible sources. I will just give this as an idea if you've got a son or daughter who's still in high school or maybe junior high. A friend of mine works at a very successful real estate firm, and they just paid a lot of money and hired the director of artificial intelligence.
Wow.
Now, who would have thought that when we were in high school?
Yeah.
You know, that would have been
sci-fi movie right there.
Mark, you've had a long career. You've been successful. What are some things that you've done that our listeners should do? Maybe we've got listeners that are early on in their career in business or in parenthood, or maybe they're wanting to be a public speaker. What are some things that you've done that our listeners should do?
I'll begin with something I didn't do that listeners should do, and I didn't do it 30 or 40 years ago, and at least I have a good excuse, although it's not a valid excuse, and that is customer relationship management, CRM, tracking names and addresses of people who you know, did business with you, bought from you, hired you. I was late to the party on that, mostly lethargy. I was having too much fun speaking to actually track, you know, some of those things that would have really helped to drive my business even more in the future. So I would say, you know, relationship management, whatever software you choose, your reputational and relational capital is paramount. And I don't just mean keeping a list of people. I mean, having a list of what I also call most important messages, most important relationships. Good relationships need to be nurtured. I occasionally will scroll through my cell phone contacts just to see if there's someone I've fallen out of contact with that I want to maintain contact with. So I'm very intentional about that. I also think that we bought into a myth, and you know, I'm a little older probably than most, if not all of your listeners, but growing up in the 60s and 70s, we were told that, you know, it's about that relationships thrive not based necessarily on quantity, but quality, right? So if you're a workaholic and you only get really 10 powerful minutes a day with your son or daughter, that'll replace the lack of quantity. And that's not true, right?
Right.
I learned the hard way that, you know, I did not get married until I was 37. So the beginning of my career when I was doing the crazy stuff, you know, traveling more like 240 days a year, it was not at the expense of a family. It wasn't at the expense of my kids or my spouse. And I just think that that is a thing to remember. Something I do, and it's probably resulted in more physical benefits than anything else, is I'm a regular exerciser. I exercise 6 days a week, take 1 day a week off for recovery, whether it's cardiovascular or lifting weights. Tremendous positive impact, especially if you struggle with depression. There's been research that says that physical activity like exercise is nearly as good at, not instead of, but as a complement, nearly as good as medicine for dealing with depression. And, you know, the older you get, the better you feel when you exercise. When you're young, you're full of vinegar, right? I mean, you got a lot of energy, and then you start to slow down and you realize, and I learned this from Jack LaLanne, one of the people I love I never met, but I was a huge fan of Jack LaLanne. Jack LaLanne, many years ago, was asking an interview. And he said, Jack, it's rumored, you know, maybe that you, even though you don't do sugar and you exercise every day, you may party a little bit. And he never confirmed or denied it, but he said something that I've always remembered. He said, I put a lot in so I can take a lot out. Mm. And that, if somebody said, summarize your philosophy of physical activity, it'd be that. I put in more so I have more to take out. And the final thing is, I'm a less of a voracious reader in the traditional sense of somebody who reads a book a week, although I often do. But I'm much more of a voracious learner in that with the internet and websites, I am always combing through not just information directly related to what I do, but things unrelated. That's where I get my best ideas. So there's a potpourri, I guess, things that I do and things I didn't do that might be helpful.
I think you've alluded to this, but we've talked about the 20th anniversary is coming up on the
2024
March. What else are you working on right now?
What I'm working on now, I serve as an advisor for financial services on the advisor board of a financial services firm. I continue to write much less blogging, much more short form writing on LinkedIn. That's probably where, if somebody said, where can I learn what you're thinking about most other than my website, I would say, you know, follow me, connect with me on LinkedIn. My sons, one is an aviator for the Marines and learning to fly jets. Very proud of him. The other also is a realtor. So he's very interested in getting into real estate investment. And so our whole family bought a rental property that he's the resident manager of. And, you know, there, you reminded me of a book. It's probably out of print, but you could get it used. Years ago, a guy wrote a book called Margins. You might have run across it. I want to say his last name was Swenson, but I could be making that up. But it goes back to that thing about little things make a big difference. He says, if you don't have margins in your life, nothing good seeps in, right? Or a variation on, if you're running too fast, nothing good catches you. And so since COVID, as I've kind of restructured how I do my business, still speaking, still writing, the margins I've used to devote to actively, you know, helping my boys in ways that I can, spending time with them that maybe I didn't have a chance to do earlier, and you know, doing things to, you know, in our home that, frankly, my wife's been terrific at taking care of that stuff. But now that I'm around more, I'm finding fun things to do that if you'd have told me they'd be fun 20 years ago, I'd have thought you were out of your mind.
That's right.
So lots and lots and lots of little things. The big thing being, of course, the 20th anniversary of the Fred Factor. My mantra is be extraordinary. Nobody can prevent you from choosing to be extraordinary. You might not be rewarded or recognized for it. You might not have been taught how to do it, but ultimately extraordinary is a choice. So if you wanted to summarize all those years of books and speaking, it would be extraordinary.
Mark, this has been so good just hearing from you and you sharing just kind of behind the curtains what's going on. And I know you've got a huge following of people that have been so impacted by you that hopefully will love to hear some of those things in the Sanborn studio of the home right there.
But intergalactic headquarters of Sanborn and Associates.
Right? I love it.
Recently remodeled.
Yes. Yeah. Recently rearranged intergalactic.
Yes. Well, Mark, just kind of coming down the home stretch, closing out, if there was one thing that you would just want our listeners to grasp today more than anything that maybe is on your heart or just kind of top of mind for you, what's that sort of one thing you would want the listeners to walk away with today that you could just kind of drop into them?
I'll quote G.K. Chesterton, who said, "The world will never lack for wonders, only wonder." I think if we can keep our curiosity alive, there are so many things to learn and do and experience and be. When my boys were young and they were playing computer games that had more technology than spaceships when I was growing up, they'd say they were bored, and I'd say bored is a choice, not a condition. By the way, I have to remind myself of that too, because it's easy for us to just get caught up and suddenly say, wow, I'm just so bored. The world is full of wonder. So if you want to be successful, continue to pay attention and wonder about it.
That's good. You know, one of the things, we've got four kiddos, my wife and I, and one of the things, and my two oldest girls will tell you this, and my two young boys are learning this, but whenever they say, I'm bored, they'll, in fact, my older girls will look at the younger boys now and say what I told to them when they were little, and that's, nobody can make you bored except for you. That's what we've always told them, and that you kind of, you know, get out of it what you put in. So, Mark, it has been so great to have you here. We're in our show notes and in all the promo of this show. We will link back to your resources, and we're really excited about the release of The Fred Factor that will be coming out here shortly. But all the other books you've got, gosh, how many books have you written total, Mark? Is that?
Well, if you count just major publishers, 8. If you count minor publishers and a few odds and ends, a bunch more, but 8 that I think
Well, I've read every one of them, and I highly, highly recommend them. So just encourage all of our listeners, check out Mark Sanborn. Search him. He's got so many great resources, great speaker, great communicator, and that. It was an honor to have you on the show here today.
More information at marksanborn.com, and all the links will be in the show notes. Mark, thanks for joining us at the coffee table today.
Thanks for listening to the John Barrett Leadership Podcast. To get more of John's resources, visit www.johnbarrettleadership.com.